Now on, everyone make your answers as short as possible and spit them out when asked. Now, Brad, try again. This time, Brad snapped up beside a seat. Mr. Ross, Chamberlain. Ben nodded approvingly. Now that's the way to answer a question. Punctual, precise, with punch. Andrea, what country did Hitler invade in September of 1939? Andrea, the ballet dancer, stood stiffly by her desk. Mr. Ross, I don't know. Mr. Ross smiled. Still, a good response because you used proper form. Amy, do you know the answer? Amy hopped up beside her desk. Mr. Ross, Poland. Excellent, Mr. Ross said. Brian, what was the name of Hitler's political party? Brian quickly got out of his chair. Mr. Ross, the Nazis. Mr. Ross nodded. That's good, Brian. Very quick. Now, does anyone know the official name of the party? Lori? Lori Saunders stood up beside her desk. The National Socialist... No! There was a sharp bang as Mr. Ross struck his desktop with a ruler. Now do it again correctly. Lori sat down, a confused look on her face. What had she done wrong? David leaned over and whispered in her ear. Oh, right. She stood up again. Mr. Ross, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. Correct, Mr. Ross replied. Mr. Ross kept asking questions, and around the room, students jumped to attention, eager to show that they knew both the answer and the correct form with which to give it. It was a far cry from the normally casual atmosphere of the classroom, but neither Ben nor his students reflected on that fact. They were too caught up in this new game. The speed and precision of each question and answer were exhilarating. Soon Ben was perspiring as he shouted each question out, and another student rose sharply beside his or her desk to shout back a terse reply. Peter, who proposed the Lend-Lease Act? Mr. Ross, Roosevelt. Right. Eric, who died in the death camps? Mr. Ross, the Jews. Anyone else, Brad? Mr. Ross, gypsies, homosexuals, and the feeble-minded. Good. Amy, why were they murdered? Mr. Ross, because they weren't part of the superior race. Correct. David, who ran the death camps? Mr. Ross, the SS. Excellent. Out in the hall, the bells were ringing, but no one in the classroom moved from their seat. Still carried by the momentum of the class's progress that period, Ben stood at the front of the room and issued the final order of the day. Tonight, finish reading Chapter 7 and read the first half of Chapter 8. That's all. Class dismissed. Before him, the class rose in what seemed like a single movement and rushed out into the hall. Wow, that was weird, man. It was like a rush. Brian gasped in uncharacteristic enthusiasm. He and some of the students from Mr. Ross's class were standing in a tight pack in the corridor, still riding on the energy they'd felt in the classroom.
I've never felt anything like that before, said Eric beside him.
Well, it sure beats taking notes, Amy cracked.
Yeah, Brian said. He and a couple of other students laughed.
Hey, but don't knock it, David said. That was really different. It was like... when we all acted together, we were more than just a class. We were a unit. Remember what Mr. Ross said about power? I think he was right. Didn't you feel it?
Ah, you're taking it too seriously, said Brad behind him.
Yeah? David said.
Well then, how do you explain it?
Brad shrugged.
What's to explain? Ross asked questions, we answered them. It was like any other class, except we had to sit up straight and stand next to our desks. I think you're making a big deal out of nothing.
I don't know, Brad, David said as he turned and left the pack of students.
Where are you going? Brian asked.
The John, David answered. Catch up to you in the cafeteria.
Okay, Brian said.
Hey, remember to sit up straight, Brad said.
And the others laughed. David pushed through the door to the men's room. He really wasn't sure if Brad was right or not. Maybe he was making a big deal out of nothing. But on the other hand, there had been that feeling, that group unity. Maybe it didn't make that much difference in the classroom. After all, you were just answering questions. But suppose you took that group feeling, that high-energy feeling, and got the football team into it. There were some good athletes on the team. It made David mad that they had such a bad record. They really weren't that bad. They were just under-motivated and disorganized. David knew that if he could ever get the team even half as charged up as Mr. Ross's history class had been that day, they could tear apart most of the teams in their league. Inside the John, David heard the second bell ring, warning students that the next period was about to begin. He stepped out of a stall and was heading to the sinks when he saw someone and stopped abruptly. The bathroom had emptied out, and only one person was left. Robert. He was standing in front of a mirror, tucking in his shirt, unaware that he wasn't alone. As David watched, the class loser straightened some of the hair on his head and stared at his reflection. Then he snapped to attention, and his lips moved silently, as if he was still in Mr. Ross's class answering questions. David stood motionless as Robert practiced the move again and again. Late that night in their bedroom, Christy Ross sat on the side of the bed in her red nightgown and brushed her long auburn hair. Near her, Ben was pulling his pajamas out of a drawer. You know, he said, I would have thought they'd all hate it, being ordered around and forced to sit straight and recite answers. Instead, they took to it like they'd been waiting for something like this their whole lives. It was weird. Don't you think they were just playing it like a game? Christy asked. Simply competing with each other to see who could be the fastest and straightest? I'm sure that was part of it, Ben told his wife. But even a game is something you either choose to play or not to play. They didn't have to play that game, but they wanted to. The strangest thing was, once we started, I could feel them wanting more. They wanted to be disciplined. And each time they mastered one discipline, they wanted another. When the bell rang at the end of the period and they were still in their seats, I knew it meant more to them than just a game. Christy stopped brushing her hair. You mean they stayed after the bell? She asked. Ben nodded. That's what I mean. His wife looked at him skeptically, but then grinned. Ben, I think you've created a monster. Hardly, Ben replied, chuckling. Christy put down her brush and rubbed some cream into her face. On his side of the bed, Ben was pulling on his pajama top. Christy was waiting for her husband to lean over for their customary goodnight kiss. But tonight it was not forthcoming. He was still lost in thought. Ben, Christy said. Yeah? Do you think you'll go on with it tomorrow? I don't think so, her husband replied. We've got to get on to the Japanese campaign. Christy closed the jar of cream and settled comfortably into the bed. But on his side, Ben still had not moved. He had told his wife how surprisingly enthusiastic his students had been that afternoon. But he had not told her that he, too, had gotten caught up in it. It would almost be embarrassing to admit that he could get swept up in such a simple game. But yet, on reflection, he knew that he had. The fierce exchange of questions and answers, the quest for perfect discipline, it had been infectious, and in a way, mesmerizing. He had enjoyed his student's accomplishment. Interesting, he thought as he got into bed. Chapter 6. For Ben, what happened the next day was extremely unusual.
Instead of his students straggling into class after the bell had rung,
it was he who was late. He'd accidentally left his lecture notes and book on Japan in his car that morning, and had to run out to the parking lot before class to get them. As he rushed into the classroom, he expected to find a madhouse, but he was in for a surprise. In his room were 5 neat rows of desks, 7 desks to a row. At each desk, a student sat stiffly in the posture Ben had taught them the previous day. The room was silent, and Ross surveyed his class uneasily. Was it a joke? Here and there, he saw a face on the verge of smiling, but those were clearly outnumbered by faces at stiff attention, staring straight ahead, concentrating. A few students glanced at him uncertainly, waiting to see if he'd carry it further. Should he? It was such an experience, and so different from the norm that it tantalized him. What could they learn from this? What could he learn? Tempted by the unknown, Ben decided it was worth finding out. "Well, okay," he said, putting away his notes. "What's going on here?" The students looked at him uncertainly. Ben looked toward the far side of the room. "Robert?" Robert Billings quickly rose beside his desk. His shirt was tucked in, and his hair was combed. "Mr. Ross, discipline."
"Yes, discipline," Mr. Ross agreed. "But that's just part of it. There's something more."
Then he turned to the blackboard, and underneath the large strength through discipline from the day before, he added, "Community." He turned back to the class. "Community is the bond between people who work and struggle together for a common goal. It's like building a barn with your neighbors." A few students in the room chuckled. But David knew what Mr. Ross was saying. It was what he'd thought about yesterday after class. It was the kind of team spirit the football team needed.
"It's the feeling that you're part of something that's more important than yourself," Mr. Ross was telling them. "You're a movement, a team, a cause. You're committed to something..."
"I think we ought to be committed, all right," someone mumbled, but the nearby students hushed him.
"Like discipline," Mr. Ross continued, "to understand community fully, you have to experience it and participate in it. From now on, our 2 mottos will be strength through discipline and strength through community. Everyone, repeat our mottos."
Around the room, students rose beside their desks and recited the slogans. "Strength through discipline. Strength through community." A few students, including Lori and Brad, did not join them, but sat uncomfortably in their chairs as Mr. Ross had the class repeat the mottos again. Finally, Lori rose, and then Brad. Now the entire class stood beside their desks.
"What we need now is a symbol for our new community," Mr. Ross told them.
He turned back to the board, and after a moment's thought, drew a circle with the outline of a wave inside it.
"This will be our symbol. A wave is a pattern of change. It has movement, direction, and impact. From now on, our community, our movement, will be known as the Wave."
He paused and looked at the class standing at stiff attention, accepting everything he told them.
"And this will be our salute," he said,
cupping his right hand in the shape of a wave, then tapping it against his left shoulder and holding it upright.
"Class, give the salute," he ordered.
The class gave the salute. Some hit their right shoulders instead of their left. Others forgot to hit their shoulders entirely.
"Again," Ross ordered, making the salute himself.
He repeated the exercise until everyone had it right.
"All right," their teacher said when they'd gotten it.
Once again, the class could feel the resurgence of power and unity that had overwhelmed them the day before.
"This is our salute, and our salute only,"
he told them. Whenever you see another WAVE member, you will salute. Robert, salute and give our mottos. Standing stiffly beside his seat, Robert performed the salute and replied, Mr. Ross, strength through discipline, strength through community. Very good, Ben said. Peter, Amy, and Eric, salute and recite our motto with Robert. The four students obediently saluted and chanted, Strength through discipline, strength through community. Brian, Andrea, and Lori, Mr. Ross commanded, join them and repeat. Now 7 students joined in the chant, then 14, then 20, until the whole class was saluting and chanting loudly in unison, strength through discipline, strength through community. Like a regiment, Ben thought. Just like a regiment. In the gym after school, David and Eric sat on the floor in their football practice jerseys. They were a little early for practice and were having a heated debate. I think it's dumb, Eric said as he tied the laces on his cleats. It's just a game in history class, that's all. But that doesn't mean it couldn't work, David insisted. What do you think we learned it for anyway? To keep it a secret? I'm telling you, Eric, this is just what the team needs.
Well, you're going to have to convince Coach Schiller of that, Eric said. And I'm not going to tell him.
What are you scared of? David asked. You think Mr. Ross is going to punish me because I tell a couple of people about the WAVE?
Eric shrugged. No, man. I think they're going to laugh.
Brian came out of the locker room and joined them on the floor.
Hey, David said. What do you think of us trying to get the rest of the team into the WAVE?
Brian tugged at his shoulder pads and thought about it.
You think the WAVE could stop that 220-pound linebacker from Clarkstown? He asked. I swear, that's all I think about. I keep picturing me calling for the snap, and then this thing appears in front of me. This giant thing in a Clarkstown uniform. It steps on my center. It squashes my guards. It's so big I can't go left. I can't go right. I can't throw over it.
Brian rolled on his back on the floor and pretended someone was bearing down on him.
It just keeps coming and coming. Ah!
Eric and David laughed, and Brian sat up.
I'll do anything, he told them. Eat my Wheaties, join the WAVE, do my homework. Anything to stop that guy.
More players had gathered around them, including a junior named Deutsch, who was the second-string quarterback behind Brian. Everyone on the team knew that Deutsch wanted nothing more in the world than to steal Brian's position from him. As a result, the two of them didn't get along.
I hear you say you're afraid of the Clarkstown team? Deutsch asked Brian. I'll take your place, man. Just say the word.
They let you into the game and we'll have no chance at all, Brian told him.
Deutsch sneered.
The only reason you're first string is because you're a senior, he said.
Still sitting on the gym floor, Brian gazed up at the junior.
Man, you are the most conceited bag of no talent I've ever seen, he said.
Oh yeah? Look who's talking.
Deutsch snarled back. The next thing David knew, Brian had jumped to his feet and had his fists up. David lunged between the two quarterbacks.
That's just what I was talking about, he yelled as he pushed them apart. We're supposed to be a team. We're supposed to support each other. The reason we've been so bad is because all we've been doing is fighting with each other.
More football players were in the gym now. What's he talking about? One of them asked. David turned.
I'm talking about unity. I'm talking about discipline. We have to start acting like a team. Like we have a common goal. Your job on this team isn't to steal another guy's position. Your job is to help this team win.
I could help this team win, Deutsch said. All Coach Schiller's got to do is make me the first-string quarterback.
No, man, David yelled at him. A bunch of self-serving individuals don't make a team. You know why we've done so bad this year?
Because we're 25 one-man teams all wearing the same Gordon High uniforms. You want to be first-string quarterback on a team that doesn't win? Or do you want to be second-string on a team that does win?
Deutsch shrugged. I'm tired of losing, said another player.
Yeah, said someone else. It's a drag. This school doesn't even take us seriously anymore.
I'd give up my position and be a water boy if it meant winning a game, said a third.
Well, we could win, said David. I'm not saying we'll be able to go out and destroy Clarkstown on Saturday, but if we start trying to be a team, I bet we could win a few games this year.
Most of the members of the football team were there by this time, and as David looked around at their faces, he could see that they were interested.
Okay, said one. What do we do?
David hesitated for a moment. What they could do was the wave. But who was he to tell them? He'd only learned of it the day before himself. Suddenly, he felt someone nudging him.
Tell them, Eric whispered. Tell them about the wave.
What the hell? David thought.
Okay. All I know is you gotta start by learning the mottos. And this is the salute.
Chapter 7 That evening, Lori Saunders told her parents about her last 2 days of history class. The Saunders family was sitting at the dining room table finishing dinner. Through most of the meal, Lori's father had given them a stroke-by-stroke description of the 78 he'd shot in golf that afternoon. Mr. Saunders ran a division of a large semiconductor company. Lori's mother said that she didn't mind his passion for golf because on the course he managed to get out all the pressures and frustrations of his job. She said she couldn't explain how he did it, but as long as he came home in a good mood, she wasn't going to argue. Neither was Lori. Although listening to her father talk about his golf game sometimes bored her to death. It was better that he was easygoing, rather than a worrywart like her mother, who was probably the brightest and most perceptive woman Lori had ever encountered.
She practically ran the county's League of Women Voters by herself, and was so politically astute that aspiring politicians seeking local offices were always asking her to advise them.
For Lori, her mother was lots of fun when things were going well. She was full of ideas, and you could talk to her for hours. But other times, when Lori was upset about something or was having a problem, her mother was murder. There was no way to hide anything from her. And once Lori had admitted what the difficulty was, she wouldn't leave her alone. When Lori started telling them about the wave at dinner, it was mostly because she couldn't stand listening to her father talk about golf for another minute. She could tell her mother was bored, too. For the last quarter hour, Mrs. Saunders had been scratching a wax stain out of the tablecloth with her fingernail. It was incredible, Lori was saying about the class. Everyone was saluting and repeating the motto. You couldn't help but get caught up in it. You know, really wanting to make it work. Feeling all that energy building around you. Mrs. Saunders stopped scratching the tablecloth and looked at her daughter.
I don't like it, Lori. It sounds too militaristic to me.
Oh, Mom, Lori said. You always take things the wrong way. It's nothing like that. Honest, you just have to be there feeling the positive energy in the class to really get what's going on.
Mr. Saunders agreed. To tell you the truth, I'm for whatever will make these kids pay attention to anything these days.
And that's what it's really doing, Mom, Lori said. Even the bad kids are into it. You know Robert Billings, the class creep? Even he's part of a group. No one's picked on him for 2 whole days. Tell me that isn't positive.
But you're supposed to be learning history, Mrs. Saunders argued, not how to be part of a group.
Well, you know, her husband said, this country was built by people who were part of a group. The Pilgrims, the Founding Fathers. I don't think it's wrong for Lori to be learning how to cooperate. If I could get some more cooperation down at the plant, instead of this constant backbiting and bickering and everyone trying to cover his you-know-what, we wouldn't be behind in production this year.
I didn't say that it was wrong to cooperate, Mrs. Saunders replied. But still, people have to do things in their own way. You talk about the greatness of this country, and you're talking about people who weren't afraid to act as individuals.
Mom, I really think you're taking this the wrong way, Lori said. Mr. Ross has just found a way to get everybody involved. And we're still doing our homework. It's not like we've forgotten about history.
But her mother was not to be appeased. That's all very well and good. But it just doesn't sound like the right thing for you, Lori. Babe, we've raised you to be an individual.
Lori's father turned to his wife. Midge, don't you think you're taking all this a little too seriously? A little bit of community spirit is a terrific thing for these kids.
That's right, Mom, Lori said, smiling. Haven't you always said that I was a little too independent?
Mrs. Saunders was not amused.
Honey, just remember that the popular thing is not always the right thing.
Oh, Mom, Lori said, annoyed that her mother would not see her side of the argument at all.
Either you're being stubborn or you just don't understand this at all.
Really, Midge, Mr. Saunders said. I'm sure Lori's history teacher knows exactly what he's doing. I don't see why you should make this into a big deal.
You don't think it's dangerous to allow a teacher to manipulate students like that? Mrs. Saunders asked her husband.
Mr. Ross isn't manipulating us, Lori said. He's one of my best teachers. He knows what he's doing. And as far as I'm concerned, what he's doing is for the class's good. I wish some of my other teachers were as interesting.
Lori's mother seemed ready to keep arguing, but her husband changed the subject.
Where's David tonight? He asked. Isn't he coming over?
David often came over in the evening, usually on the pretense of studying with Lori. But inevitably, he'd wind up in the den with Mr. Saunders talking about sports or engineering. Since David hoped to study engineering just as Mr. Saunders had, they had lots to talk about. Mr. Saunders had also played high school football. Mrs. Saunders had once told Lori that it was surely a match made in heaven.
Lori shook her head.
He's home studying tomorrow's history assignment.
Mr. Saunders looked surprised.
David studying? Now there's something to be concerned about.
Because Ben and Christy Ross both taught full-time at the high school, they had grown accustomed to sharing many of the after-school chores around their house, cooking, cleaning, and running errands. That afternoon, Christy had to take her car into the shop to get the muffler replaced, so Ben had agreed that he'd cook. But after that history class, he felt too preoccupied to bother cooking. Instead, he stopped at the Chinese takeout place on the way home and picked up some egg rolls and egg foo young. When Christy got home around dinner time, she found the table not covered with plates for dinner, but with books again. Looking over the brown paper takeout bags on the kitchen counter, she asked,
"You call this dinner?"
Ben looked up from the table. "I'm sorry, Chris. I'm just so preoccupied with this class, and I've got so much to do to prepare for it. I didn't want to take time to cook."
Christy nodded. It wasn't as if he did this every time it was his turn to cook. She could forgive him this time.
She started unpacking the food. "So how is your experiment going, Dr. Frankenstein? Have your monsters turned on you yet?"
"On the contrary," her husband replied. "Most of them are actually turning into human beings."
"You don't say," said Christy.
"I happen to know that they're all keeping up on their reading," Ben said. "Some of them are even reading ahead. It's as if they suddenly love being prepared for class.
Or they're suddenly afraid of being unprepared," his wife observed. But Ben ignored her comment.
"No, I really think they've improved. At least they're behaving better."
Christy shook her head.
"These can't be the same kids I have for music."
"I'm telling you," her husband said. "It's amazing how much more they like you when you make decisions for them."
"Sure, it means less work for them.
They don't have to think for themselves, Christie said. But now stop reading and clear some of those books away so we can eat.
As Ben made room on the kitchen table, Christie set the food out. When Ben stood up, Christie thought he was going to help her, but instead he started pacing around the kitchen, deep in thought. Christie went on getting the meal ready, but she too was thinking about the wave. There was something about it that bothered her. Something about the tone of her husband's voice when he spoke about his class, as if they were now better students than the rest of the school. As she sat down at the table, she said, "How far do you plan to push this, Ben?"
"I don't know," Ross answered. "But I think it could be fascinating to see."
Christie watched her husband pace around the kitchen, lost in thought.
"Why don't you sit down?" she said. "Your egg foo young's going to get cold."
"You know," her husband said as he came to the table and sat down, "the funny thing is, I feel myself getting caught up in it, too. It's contagious." Christie nodded. That was obvious.
"Maybe you're becoming a guinea pig in your own experiment," she said.
Although she made it sound like a joke, she was hoping he'd take it as a warning. Chapter 8. Both David and Lori lived within walking distance of Gordon High. David's route didn't necessarily lead past Lori's house, but ever since 10th grade, he'd always gone out of his way. When he first noticed her, as a sophomore, he used to walk down her street on the way to school every morning, hoping that he would pass her house just as she was leaving for school. At first, he managed to run into her only about once a week. But as the weeks passed and they got to know each other, he began to catch her more frequently, until by the spring, they walked together almost every day. For a long time, David thought this was just a matter of luck and good timing. It never occurred to him that from the beginning, Lori had waited at her window, watching for him. At first, she had only pretended to run into him once a week. Later, she ran into him more often. When David picked Lori up to walk with her to school the next morning, he was bursting with brainstorms.
"I'm telling you, Lori," he said as they walked along a sidewalk toward school, "this is just what the football team needs."
"What the football team needs," Lori told him, "is a quarterback who can pass, a running back who doesn't fumble, a couple of linebackers who aren't afraid to tackle, an end who..."
"Stop it," David said irritably. "I'm serious. I got the team into it yesterday. Brian and Eric helped me. The guys really responded to it. I mean, it's not like we improved in only one practice, but I could feel it. I could really feel the team spirit. Even Coach Schiller was impressed. He said we were like a new team."
"My mother says it sounds like brainwashing to her," Lori said.
"What?"
"She says Mr. Ross is manipulating us."
"She's crazy," David said. "How could she know? And besides, what do you care what your mother says? You know she worries about everything."
"I didn't say I agreed with her," Lori said.
"Well, you didn't say you disagreed with her either," David said.
"I was just telling you what she said," Lori replied.
David wouldn't let it drop. "How does she know anyway? She can't possibly understand what the wave is about unless she's been in class to see it work. Parents always think they know everything."
Lori suddenly felt an urge to disagree with them, but she restrained herself. She didn't want to start a fight with David over something so petty. She hated it when they quarreled. Besides, for all she knew, the wave might be just what the football team needed. They certainly needed something. She decided to change the subject.
"Did you find help for calculus?"
David shrugged.
"Nah. The only kids who know anything are in my class."
"So why not ask one of them?"
"No way," David said. "I don't want any of them to know I'm having trouble."
"Why not?" Lori asked. "I'm sure someone would help you."
"Of course they would," David said. "But I don't want their help."
Lori sighed.
It was true that lots of kids at school were competitive about grades and class standing. But few took it as far as David did. "Well," she said, "I know Amy didn't say anything at lunch, but if you can't find anyone else, she could probably help you."
"Amy?"
"She's incredibly smart in math," Lori explained. "I bet you could give her your problem, and she'd have it figured out in 10 minutes. "But I asked her at lunch," David said. "She was just being shy," Lori said. "I think she likes Brian, and she just doesn't want to intimidate him by seeming too brainy." David laughed. "I don't think she has to worry, Lori. The only way she could intimidate him was if she weighed 200 pounds and wore a Clarkstown uniform." When the students arrived in class that day, there was a large poster in the back of the room with a blue wave symbol on it. They found Mr. Ross dressed differently than usual. Where before he'd come to class in casual clothes, today he wore a blue suit, white shirt, and a tie. The students went quickly to their seats as their teacher walked up and down the aisles passing out small yellow cards. Brad nudged Lori. "It's not time for report cards," he whispered. Lori stared at the card she'd received. "It's a WAVE membership card," she whispered back. "What?" Brad hissed.
"All right," Mr. Ross slapped his hands together loudly. "No talking."
Brad sat up straight in his seat. But Lori understood his surprise. "Membership cards? It must have been a joke." Meanwhile, Mr. Ross had finished distributing the cards and stood in the front of the room.
"Now you will all have membership cards," Mr. Ross announced. "If you turn them over, you will find that some of them have been marked with a red X. If you have a red X, you are to be a monitor. And you will report directly to me any members of the WAVE who do not obey our rules."
Around the room, students were scrutinizing their cards and turning them over to see if they had a red X. Those who had them, like Robert and Brian, were smiling. Those who didn't, like Lori, seemed less pleased. Lori raised her hand.
"Yes, Lori," Ben said.
What's the point of this?" Lori asked. There was a silence around the room, and Ben did not answer right away. Then he said,
"Aren't you forgetting something?"
"Oh, right." Lori got up and stood next to her desk. "Mr. Ross, what's the point of these cards?" Ben had expected someone to question him on the cards. The reason for them would not be apparent immediately. For now, he said, "It's just an example of how a group might monitor itself." Lori had no other questions, so Ben turned to the blackboard and added another word to strength through discipline, strength through community. Today's word was action. "Now that we understand discipline and community," he told the class, "action is our next lesson. Ultimately, discipline and community are meaningless without action. Discipline gives you the right to action. A disciplined group with a goal can take action to achieve it. They must take action to achieve it. Class, do you believe in the WAVE?" There was a split-second hesitation, and then the class rose in unison and answered in what seemed like a single voice. "Mr. Ross, yes." Mr. Ross nodded. "Then you must take action. Never be afraid to act on what you believe. As the WAVE, you must act together like a well-oiled machine. Through hard work and allegiance to each other, you will learn faster and accomplish more. But only if you support one another, and only if you work together and obey the rules, can you ensure the success of the WAVE." As he spoke, the class members stood beside their desks at attention. Lori Saunders stood with them, but she did not feel the high energy and unity she'd felt on previous days. In fact, today there was something about the class, something about their single-mindedness and absolute obedience to Mr. Ross that she would almost describe as creepy. "Be seated," Mr. Ross ordered, and instantly the class sat. Their teacher continued his lesson.
When we first began the wave a few days ago, I felt that some of you were actually competing to give the right answers and to be better members than others. From now on, I want this to end. You are not competing against each other. You are working together for a common cause. You must conceive of yourselves as a team of which you are all members. Remember, in the wave, you are all equals. No one is more important or more popular than anyone else, and no one is to be excluded from the group. Community means equality within the group. Now your first action as a team will be to actively recruit new members. To become a member of the wave, each new student must demonstrate knowledge of our rules and pledge strict obedience to them. David smiled as Eric looked over at him and winked. This was what he'd needed to hear. There was nothing wrong with turning other kids onto the wave. It was for the good of everybody, especially the football team, Mr. Ross had concluded his talk on the wave. He intended to spend the rest of the period reviewing the assignment he'd given the class the night before. But suddenly a student named George Snyder was raising his hand. Yes, George. George sprang from his seat to attention by his desk. Mr. Ross, for the first time I feel like I'm part of something, he announced. Something great. Around the room, startled students stared at George. Feeling the eyes of the class upon him, George began to sink back into his chair. But then Robert suddenly stood. Mr. Ross, he said proudly, I know just how George feels. It's like being born again. No sooner had he returned to his seat than Amy stood. George is right, Mr. Ross. I feel the same way. David was pleased. He knew that what George had done was corny. But then Robert and Amy had done it too, just so George wouldn't feel foolish and alone. That's what was good about the wave. They supported each other. Now he stood up and said, Mr. Ross, I'm proud of the wave. This sudden outburst of testimonials surprised Ben. He was determined to get on to the day's classwork. But suddenly he knew he had to go along with the class a little longer. Almost subconsciously, he sensed how much they wanted him to lead them, and it was something he felt he could not deny. Our salute, he ordered. Around the room, students jumped to attention beside their desks and gave the wave salute. The motto swallowed. Strength through discipline. Strength through community. Strength through action. Mr. Ross was picking up his class notes when the students burst forth again, this time giving the salute and chanting their motto without prompting. Then silence fell over the room. Mr. Ross gazed at the students in wonderment. The wave was no longer just an idea or a game. It was a living movement in his students. They were the wave now. And Ben realized that they could act on their own without him if they wanted. That thought could have been frightening, but Ben was confident that he had control as their leader. The experiment was simply becoming much more interesting. At lunch that day, all the wave members who were in the cafeteria sat at a single long table. Brian, Brad, Amy, Lori, and David were there. At first, Robert Billings seemed tentative about joining them, but when David saw him, he insisted he sit at the table, telling him they were all part of the wave now. Most of the kids were raving about what was going on in Mr. Ross's class, and Lori really had no reason to argue with them. But still she felt odd, all that saluting and chanting. Finally, during a pause in the conversation, she said, Does anyone feel kind of strange about this? David turned to her. What do you mean? I don't know, Lori said. But doesn't it feel a little weird? It's just so different, Amy told her. That's why it feels weird. Yeah, Brad said. It's like there's no in-crowd anymore. Man, the thing that bugs me the most about school sometimes is all these little cliques. I'm tired of feeling like every day's a big popularity contest. That's what's so great about the wave.
You don't have to worry about how popular you are. We're all equal. We're all part of the same community.
Do you think everyone likes that? Lori asked.
Do you know anyone who doesn't? David asked.
Lori felt her face grow flushed.
Well, I'm not sure I do.
Suddenly, Brian pulled something out of his pocket and held it up to Lori.
Hey, don't forget, he said.
He was holding up his WAVE membership card with the red X on the back.
Forget what? Lori asked.
You know, Brian said. What Mr. Ross said about reporting anyone who breaks the rules.
Lori was shocked. Brian really couldn't be serious, could he? Now Brian started to grin, and she relaxed.
Besides, David said, Lori isn't breaking any rule.
If she was really against the WAVE, she would be, Robert said. The rest of the table became silent, surprised that Robert had said anything. Some of them weren't even used to hearing his voice. He usually said so little.
What I mean is, Robert said nervously, the whole idea of the WAVE is that the people in it have to support it. If we're really a community, we all have to agree.
Lori was about to say something, but she stopped herself. It was the WAVE that had given Robert the courage to sit at the table with them and to join in the conversation. If she argued against the WAVE now, she would really be implying that Robert should go sit by himself again and not be part of their community. Brad patted Robert on his back.
Hey, I'm glad you joined us, he said.
Robert blushed and then turned to David.
Did he stick anything on my back? He asked.
Everyone at the table laughed. Chapter 9. Ben Ross wasn't quite sure what to make of the WAVE. What had begun as a simple history experiment had become a fad that was spreading outside his classroom. As a result, some unexpected things had started to occur. For one, the size of his daily history class was beginning to expand, as students from free periods, study halls, and lunch came to be part of the WAVE. The recruiting of more students for the WAVE had apparently been far more successful than he had ever expected. So successful, in fact, that Ben began to suspect that some students were cutting other classes to sit in on his. Remarkably enough, though, even with the larger class size and the students' insistence on practicing the salute and motto, the class was not falling behind. If anything, they were covering their assigned lessons even faster than usual. Using the rapid question-and-answer style that the WAVE had inspired, they had quickly covered Japan's entrance into World War II. Ben noticed a marked improvement in preparation for class and in class participation, but he also noticed that there was less thinking behind the preparation. His students could glibly spit back answers as if by rote, but there was no analysis, no questioning on their part. In a way, he could not fault them, because he himself had introduced them to the ways of the WAVE. It was just another unexpected development in the experiment. Ben reasoned that the students realized that to neglect their studies would be detrimental to the WAVE. The only way they could have time to spend on the WAVE was to be so well prepared that they only needed half the regular class to cover their assigned lessons. But he wasn't certain this was something to be pleased about. The class's homework assignments had improved, but rather than long, thoughtful answers, they wrote short ones. On a multiple-choice test, they might all do well. But Ben had his doubts about how they'd do on an exam consisting of essays. To add to the interesting developments in this experiment was a report he'd heard that David Collins and his friends Eric and Brian had successfully infused the WAVE into the school's football team. Over the years, Norm Schiller, the biology teacher who also coached the school's football team, had become so soured by wisecracks about the team's continual losses that during football season he practically went months without speaking to another teacher. But that morning in the faculty lounge, Norm had actually thanked him for introducing the WAVE to his students. Would wonders never cease?
On his own, Ben had tried to find out what it was that attracted students to the wave. Some of those he asked said it was just something new and different, like any fad. Others said they liked the democracy of it, the fact that they were all equals now. It pleased Ross to hear that answer. He enjoyed thinking that he had helped break down the petty popularity contests and cliques that he felt often preoccupied too much of his students' thinking and energy. A few students even said they thought the idea of increased discipline was good for them. That had surprised Ben. Over the years, discipline had become an increasingly personal responsibility. If the students didn't do it themselves, their teachers were less and less inclined to step in. Maybe this was a mistake, Ben thought. Perhaps one of the results of his experiment would be a general rebirth of school discipline. He even daydreamed about a story in the education section of Time magazine. Discipline returns to the classroom. Teacher makes startling discovery. Lori Saunders sat on a desk in the school publications office, chewing on the end of a pen. Various members of the Gordon Grapevine staff sat on desks around her, biting their nails or chewing gum. Alex Cooper was wearing his Sony radio and was bopping to the music through his earphones. Another reporter was wearing roller skates. This was the Grapevine's excuse for a weekly editorial meeting. Okay, Lori told them. We've got the same problem as usual. The paper is due out next week, but we don't have enough stories. Lori looked at the girl wearing roller skates. Jeannie, you were supposed to do a fashion story on the latest clothes. Where is it?
Oh, nobody's wearing anything interesting this year, Jeannie replied. It's always the same thing. Jeans and sneakers and t-shirts.
Well then, write about how there are no new styles this year, Lori said. Then she turned to the reporter who was bopping to his radio. Alex? Alex kept bopping. He couldn't hear her. Alex! Lori said more loudly. Finally, someone near Alex gave him a nudge. He looked up, startled.
Yeah?
Lori rolled her eyes. Alex, this is supposed to be an editorial meeting.
Really?
Alex replied. Okay, so where's your record review for this issue? Lori asked.
Oh, yeah, record review. Right, yeah, Alex said. Well, you see, it's a long story. I was going to do it, but, remember that trip I said I had to take to Argentina?
Lori rolled her eyes again.
Well, it fell through, Alex said. And I had to go to Hong Kong instead.
Lori turned to Alex's sidekick, Carl.
I suppose you had to go to Hong Kong with him, she said sarcastically.
Carl shook his head. No, he replied seriously. I made the trip to Argentina as scheduled.
I see, said Lori.
She looked around at the rest of the Grapevine staff.
I suppose the rest of you have been too busy hopping around the globe to get anything written as well.
I went to the movies, Jeannie said. Did you write a review? Lori asked.
No, it was too good, she replied.
Too good?
It's no fun writing reviews of good movies, she said.
Yeah, said Alex, the globe-hopping record reviewer. It's no fun doing a review of a good movie because you can't say anything bad about it. The only time it's fun to review something is when it's bad. Then you can tear it to shreds. Hee-hee-hee.
Alex started rubbing his hands together as he went into his mad scientist routine. Alex had the best mad scientist routine in school. He also did a great imitation of a windsurfer in a hurricane.
We need stories for the paper, Lori said resolutely. Doesn't anyone have any ideas?
They got a new school bus, someone said. Whoopee! I heard that Mr. Gabondi's going on sabbatical next year.
Maybe he won't come back.
Some kid in the 10th grade put his fist through a window yesterday.
He was trying to prove that you could punch a hole in a window and not cut yourself.
Did he do it?
Nope. Got 12 stitches.
Hey, wait a minute, said Carl. What about this wave thing? Everyone wants to know what it is.
Aren't you in Ross's history class, Lori? Another staff member asked.
That's probably the biggest story in school right now, said a third.
Lori nodded.